Okay. It falls on me to introduce the next speaker, I believe. So pleased I'm doing this. This young woman has been coming to these meetings for some time. She'll probably share a bit of a milestone that she's had. But I believe that in my recovery, I've been sent people, if you understand my name meaning. I've been actually sent people, you know. And this young lady has helped me enormously. I mean, we have so much in common. We're both housebound, you know, and we talk regularly. And yeah, she brings, well, simply put, she just brings a lot of joy into my life. I'll leave it there. So, without further ado, Lisa, would you share with us, please? Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Jim.
Thanks,
Thanks,
Jim.
Jim.
Hey, Lisa.
Thanks, Jim.
Hi, everyone. I'm Lisa. I'm an addict.
Hi,
Hi,
Lisa.
Hi,
Lisa.
Lisa.
Hello, everyone. I've kind of started to cry now after Jim introducing me. Thank you so much, Jim, for that beautiful introduction. Oh, hello, Hignah. Yeah, I hope I can find the words to say. I haven't prepared anything to say because I just wanted to really come from my heart. So I am an addict from Shetland. Shetland is a little, for any of those of you that don't know, Shetland is a little island. It's about as far north as it is as far north as you can go and still be in the UK. We sit on the 60 North line, so we're very northerly. You know, it's a little island, and there is, you know, addiction is rife here. It really is. You know, I've always been addicted to people, places, and things. You know, ever since I can remember, you know, I was always a fearful child, very full of anxiety, had a very uncertain home environment. You know, I really used things like food and attention and you know, in my early years, as kind of, you know, a way to feel better. And I don't know about whether I was like 13 or 14 when I kind of moved on to substances. But you know, it was just something, you know, when I found drugs, I just thought I'd found the answer to everything because I didn't care about, you know, how much I hated myself on the inside or, you know, all the fear I felt and how lonely I felt inside. I didn't care about any of that because I, you know, that took it all away, you know, until it didn't. You know, I used and used throughout all my teens and early 20s. I used, but I was never, it was never like constantly on a daily basis, but it wasn't healthy. When I was 22 years old, I went to university. No, I was in university. I was in my last year of university. Sorry, I was just finishing my degree, and I got a virus, and it turned into a post-viral illness, and I've had, you know, really severe ME now for 11 years. But you know, in the beginning, I thought I was just going to get better. You know, it didn't occur to me that this was going to be some sort of long-term thing. So you know, my life changed just in an instant, really. And after that, you know, the doctors didn't know what to do with. They still don't know what to do with ME. It's something that's really difficult to diagnose and really difficult to, I mean, you can't treat it. You can just treat the different symptoms. And so I was given painkillers quite early on, and I just thought that they would. I mean, I'd taken my. I always used to take my dad's medication and stuff, like when I was younger, but I was delighted to have my own supply of it. And I just thought that it was great because it meant I could, have a drug that I could take every day. I didn't think about it in terms of like how it was relieving my pain. I mean, that's what I always said, but deep down, I was just so happy to have something I could use every day, and no, in my head, nobody would notice. Like, because if I was when I was tried drinking through the day, people knew, and other drugs I used to take, it was difficult to take them through the day and get away with it. So I thought that this was great because I was being prescribed a certain amount to take every day. I guess I thought it normalized it or something. Yeah, that was me. It was like I can look back at that now and I just see that, that was kind of like my the dark descent into the madness of addiction. It really got bad, and I just became completely hooked on opiates. It was an unbearable way to live, actually. But I mean, then I thought that it was completely necessary because I was not willing to accept that I was not well and that I was not getting better. It was really difficult for me to deal with, and things just got worse and worse. I ended up having to move back in home with my mum, and it just got to the point where I was able to do things less and less, and that's my illness, but also my addiction to painkillers didn't help because I was being very unhealthy and doing more than I was able to do or just withdrawing completely. It was just a horror. The last 11 years just been really dark and horrible. I was stealing from my family all the time. My dad ended up getting a security camera outside of his house because I was stealing from him so much, and then I became too ill to go out and do that. So I ended up buying online medication online, drugs online, anything I could find that was a narcotic. And the last time I did that was in May 2020, and I ordered something I'd never heard of, and the result was that I woke up in my mind 4 days later. I might have been awake before that, but I don't remember it particularly. So 4 days later, and I had no idea where I was. I was in hospital, and it was bizarre, and this was like right smack bang at the beginning of the pandemic, when really early days with COVID, May, yeah, it was really early days, and I wasn't really used to being out and around and seeing people and being in the, because I was housebound, and so I didn't know, like, people were wearing masks and they were all wearing these like plastic covers over their faces, and it was like I was like transported into some sort of dystopian world. Like, it was bizarre, and it was really frightening. I didn't even know what had happened. It never occurred to me that I could overdose. Even though, like, technically speaking, I was overdosing every single day. I was taking huge amounts of drugs. But I'd never been hospitalized for it before. I probably should have been many times, but I hadn't been. So I thought I was kind of above that. I thought I was really in control. So I didn't. When I woke up in hospital, it never occurred to me that it was because of an overdose. I thought I had COVID, and I'd just forgotten everything. And my memory's still really kind of strange around that time. I suffered a brain injury, and I was put into a coma, into an induced coma because they were worried about swelling in my brain, and the whole thing was a really traumatic event for particularly my mum and my boyfriend Danny. They had to see me like that. I wasn't able to stand on my legs. I couldn't use my legs. I wasn't breathing properly. It was, and then I started to go into fits, and I was having fits constantly. And so the ambulance came, and I was extremely lucky that I didn't lose my life. A doctor said to me afterwards that he has no idea of why or how I lived, because they didn't think there was any chance. And it's miraculous because I came out of it without any, really bad lasting injuries. Yeah, as I say, I woke up in the hospital and it was bizarre. I'd been flown, 260 miles away from where I live, Shetland, to Aberdeen, in like an emergency aeroplane. I mean, I was unconscious for it all, but yeah, it was pretty awful. And because it was, the pandemic had started then, nobody could come with me, so I was all on my own, and I was very, very frightened, very frightened. But I also, what was like the worst, day of my life, or one of the worst days of my life, became like the best thing that ever happened to me. Because, waking up in that hospital and realizing what I'd done to myself, I'd taken this crazy medication that was so dangerous, and it was not proper medication. It was just, like homemade stuff. It was like, the amount I ingested, I should never have lived. And so to know that, and to finally see how reckless I had become with my own life, it kind of made me sit up for a second and think, right, wow, like, what am I doing to myself? And like, one of the first things the nurse said to me when I woke up was, "Oh, you've detoxed in a coma, isn't that great?" And I was like, "What the fuck is she speaking about?" Like, I just couldn't understand what she was saying. Like, I detoxed. That was weird. And there was, I mean, I was kind of annoyed because I didn't like they were trying to tell me I shouldn't be on drugs, but there was a part of me that said, like, okay, maybe this is my chance, like, to get out of this. Because I thought I was never getting out. I thought I needed painkillers because I'm ill, because I'm housebound, because I'm bedbound currently, which is hard for me to say out loud, honestly. And I thought it was, something I couldn't do, like, come off drugs. I just thought it was something I had to do. I'd resigned myself to it for the rest of my life because the thought of coming off of it was unbearable. It was like something in my head changed, or maybe I was able to finally listen to my higher power because I was, I detoxed, and I mean, I was still withdrawing and it was horrific, but maybe I was able to listen to that inner voice, that the voice of my higher power. I don't know. I don't try and look back and question it too much. I'm just really glad it all happened the way it did. I was away from my family. I was terrified. I was stuck in hospital for a few days, and I had to really sit and face what I had done. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't watch the TV they gave me. I couldn't look at my phone. I couldn't speak to anyone. I just sat and stared around me at the room I was in, just absolutely terrified. But I also felt I had these moments where I just felt such intense feelings of love and gratitude, like feelings I hadn't felt in years. I felt like so much, like my family were all so concerned about me and they were so upset, and I felt really terrible about that. I felt terrible about the fact that in the middle of a pandemic, when there was people being hospitalized for something that a virus that people knew nothing about, and I know how dangerous viruses can be, right? Because that's what happened to me with my condition. I felt so much guilt that, like, I was there after overdosing. And then as well, they put me in the psych ward because they didn't know if I'd meant to kill myself or not. And I was in there with a lot of people who really needed to be in there. And it was heartbreaking. It was really, really heartbreaking. There was this girl who was in front of me, and she was like on the phone to her mum, begging her mum to let her come and stay with her so she could get out of the hospital, and like screaming at her mum because her mum obviously wouldn't let her. And I was sitting there, and my mum was trying to phone me on my phone, like, all over and over again. And I just felt so bad, and I thought, like, that's somebody that needs help. I shouldn't be here. I should know better than this. Like, what happened to me? And I just knew I didn't want to do it anymore. But I honestly was just as scared to live without drugs, as to live with them. And I didn't know if it was going to be possible for me to stay clean. The next 2 weeks, I was I had to be kept quarantined, isolated at my dad's because he came to get me from the hospital a few days later, and I had to stay at his for 2 weeks, and they kept me in one room. I couldn't get out. I couldn't get any online orders of drugs, so I was kind of stuck, and I had to stay clean during that time. I couldn't go anywhere. But it was the hardest 2 weeks of my life. It was really difficult and it was terrifying. And I came back to my house where I live with Danny, my boyfriend, and my beautiful cats, and I just felt so desperate. I had gotten in touch with the mental health team here in Shetland, and they don't have a huge amount to offer to people who are suffering with addiction. I was offered a script, like a maintenance script. But I don't know, by the I never say this, but by the grace of God, I refused. I have no idea how I mustered up the strength to do that. But I was like, well, I'm already clean. I don't want to do that. I might have gone back to that had I not made my next discovery. NA was not something I ever knew about. I knew about, like peripherally, I knew of NA and that it was a thing, and but it never was something I considered for me. It was weird. I never thought about it. Like the other fellowship has a presence here in Shetland. There's that's the yeah there seems to be plenty of meetings for people who identify as alcoholics, but there is no NA presence here, so it was never something that was offered or I knew about from being in Shetland. And one day I desperately was typing into the search engine on my computer. No, it was on my phone. I was typing in, and I, typing in for help for people, with addiction problems in Shetland. And the first thing that I saw that came up was the Highlands and Islands groups of Narcotics Anonymous. And that was the first time I even considered it. I thought, oh, NA, could that be for me? And I think I thought about it for a day. I can't actually remember the timeline of the events, to be honest. It's all kind of jumbled up. I know that I didn't understand where it was held at. Like, I didn't understand that this was like an online meeting that had been created online. I didn't understand that. I was really confused, and I thought like that I had to find somewhere in NA that was in Shetland. Like, I had to find that branch of it. I didn't realize that like I could go anywhere in the world online, and still be a part of NA, or anywhere in the world physically if I could go physically. I didn't know that. I thought I had to find the specific part that was, like specific to Shetland. Which, it makes me laugh now. And I didn't understand. And I remember like saying to my mum about it, and she said, the meetings will be online. Everything's online now. It's the pan in the pandemic, everybody's gone online. So I and I've got my I think I just got my courage together. And the next day after I found it, I clicked on the meeting to go to one of these online meetings, and there I was. And I honestly thought I was in the wrong place because there was nobody in that meeting that it's all audio, like this meeting, right? And there was nobody that had a Scottish accent. There is somebody who's always ever present in the meetings that has a Scottish accent, but she wasn't there that day. I remember thinking, oh, I must be in the wrong place. Like, this doesn't sound like the Highlands and Islands. I was very literal about it all at that point. I don't know how I got there, and I don't know how I stayed in that meeting. I remember that I was like soaking with sweat, and my mouth was so dry, and I was shaking. I don't remember what people really said, except I remember just thinking, like, I remember hearing what people had to share. And yeah, I couldn't see anybody's faces and or anything like that, but I could hear these people, and you can hear in somebody's voice like that honesty and vulnerability. And I think that that's what I connected with in that first meeting, was just hearing people talk about I mean, and it was really like hearing people talk about being addicts, and I could hear that they had done the same things that I had done or was doing, you know, all of that, like being able to relate to somebody. I was so shocked to hear people speak about addiction like that, you know, so honestly and openly. It really shocked me, because I'd never heard that before, you know. And but it was so amazing, it was so incredible. And then I heard them speak about this program and how it, you know, helped them and is still helping them. And you know, some of these people were like decades clean, and I just couldn't believe it. It was, I was just, I couldn't believe it. And I didn't really understand what it meant to have a program or the steps and what they meant. I didn't really get any of it, but I believed what these people were saying to me. I believed them. And they all seemed really happy to see, to hear my voice and to see me there. Like, they all seemed really happy about it. You know, people were giving me their numbers and they were telling me keep coming back and that they were glad I was there. I was really surprised. I couldn't understand why they would be so glad I was there. But whatever happened in that first meeting, whatever it was, because I really don't know, but I, you know, I kept coming back. I know that, you know, something happened that, you know, I knew I was supposed to be there. I felt like I was at home, you know, there's people I'd never met. I couldn't see. It was so strange, you know, like I met my sponsor in that first meeting, you know, and some the amazing people that I am, you know, like I'm friends with today, I have close relationships with today, people that are such a huge part of my life. You know, all of those people made such an effort to make sure that I knew that I was, you know, I was accepted and loved in these rooms, and that, you know, that they could help me with the problem I had, which was addiction. And I didn't know that addiction was so far-reaching as it is. I just kind of looked at it as like I was addicted to this one drug, very, very, like physically and mentally, obviously. But I just looked at it as like physically addicted. I knew I was addicted physically, but I didn't know I was an addict in the way that I understand that to be now in NA. You know, for you know, I just celebrated 18 months on Tuesday, which is incredible. You know, I can't believe I'm even saying that. And my entire recovery has been online. I've never been to a physical meeting. I mean, to be honest, I wouldn't be able to go to one currently. You know, I wouldn't be able to go somewhere and sit up for any length of time because I have my health problems, and I have to lie down most of the day. And traveling outside of the house is just gonna, it just worsens my symptoms and makes me more ill. So I'm, you know, I prefer to just be able to use the energy I have to come on to these meetings and speak to the people here who have become like my family. You know, I've met so many people through these meetings, you know, from all over the world. And I've been asked to speak at like places, you know, in Australia and South Africa on a podcast. Like, it's amazing. My world was so small before all of this, and now it's like it's opened up. And I remember my sponsor saying that to me when one of our first phone conversations, and I thought, how is my world going to open up? Like, I can't go anywhere. You know, I felt a lot of shame around the fact that I'm housebound and bedbound. See, you can tell I still feel shame about that because I don't want to say it. You know, I thought there's no way my world can open up. Like, I need to be able to work to have a good life. I need to not be ill before I can stop being an addict and stop using drugs. Like, I need to have all of this stuff. You know, I'm not good enough because I'm ill. I'm not good enough because I don't have a job. I don't have kids. You know, all of these things. And I remember my sponsor saying that to me, and I just thought, no. But she was right. You know, my world has opened up, and I don't need any of those other things to be fulfilled. Like, that was the just for today, you know, like fulfillment. And I do have like fulfillment I feel in my heart because of being a part of this program, this fellowship, is something I can't even explain in words. It's just something I feel. You know, it's I still I you know I'm still working. I'm still at the very beginning of this stuff, you know, really. And I'm just learning about myself through, I've done my step four inventory and I've read that out with my sponsor, and so I'm just taking my time through the steps and I'm seeing these layers being peeled away and seeing my behaviors. So there's, I still have a long way to go with self-acceptance. That's something that I strive for, but like I know that I know deep down today that I am enough. Hard for me to say, but I do know that deep down. And I do feel valued and loved within this fellowship, particularly here at Hignett. Like the love and the love, I can't even speak now. The love I've received here has been incredible. Like the people have just welcomed me in and just made me a part of this. I've been helped into service, I've been shown what to do. Like many people have had conversations with me for like long lengths of time, just explaining to me different things about the history of NA or, how things work in this service position, and I just get to, I get to do service with incredible people that, I can, that I really look up to and that have helped me just immeasurably. And I recently was able to help start up a new meeting here at Hignett, and that was a really proud moment for me, just to be able to do something to help the still suffering addict. I hope that I can make a difference to other people and help other people struggling with addiction the way that I've been helped. I really do hope so. Anyway, I think I was a bit all over the place and I've spoken for too long, but I just want to say how grateful I am to everybody here. I've got so many beautiful, amazing friends in this room tonight. People I love extremely. I can't even speak. Very, very much. And I'm just really grateful for Hignett and all that it's done for me and all that it's given me. And I'm so happy to be a part of it and to hopefully be able to help give back myself. But thank you all so much for listening to me and being here. And I will hand it over. Thank you.